Okay. And welcome back. Another week has raced by, and it's time for our Friday episode of the Coronavirus Chronicles with Dr. Henry Nyman, Ph.D. Happy Henry is back with us tonight, always seemingly maintaining his unique perspective on things. Lots of interesting little tidbits in the headlines. No major faux pas by Trump today. He was too much involved with his Twitter wars. But we'll give him another chance next week. He'll be at it again, no doubt. Let's see. What do we got here? I got a good story. President Kushner, his comically enormous portfolio as Trump's senior advisor. You got to look at that one. That's up. There's a lot of coronavirus stories as well. CDC now says coronavirus started spreading in the U.S. in January. Funniest thing, our first program was January the 8th. Yes, all they had to do was ask Henry and I, and we would have told them. Of course, they knew. CDC chief defends failure to spot early coronavirus spread in the U.S. No one's accountable. It's never anybody's fault. Remember that. Trump's own administration is now convinced that his hydroxychloroquine magic drug is bogus. Probably shouldn't tell Donald that. Trump administration blew a big chance for a quick recovery. That's true. It's a good story. Look at that one. Washington stay-at-home order expires on Sundays as the counties in Washington state are getting more flexibility to reopen. Alabama coronavirus cases surge to a new high as the state reopens. This is as expected. We're going to see this all over the country. The quicker the reopenings, the quicker the case numbers will rise. It's just a given. It's just the way it's going to play out. What else do we have here? I haven't read this one yet. Talking about over 300 healthcare workers have given their lives now. Not given. They've had their lives taken, including a dedicated nurse, a party-loving patient transporter, and others. So nice. There's some really good people here who we've lost. We knew this was going to happen. So brace yourselves because it's going to get this fall. Second spike, whatever you want to call it, second wave, doesn't matter. It's going to happen, and it's going to be more virulent. Oh, there was a story about that. Whistleblowing doctors say that coronavirus reinfection is even deadlier than the first go-round. Now, I'm not sure if they're all aware of the fact that we have two or three different variants, and the Italian strain is the worst. So, anyway, make of it what you will. Henry, welcome back on Friday.
Well, it's good to be back, Jeff. And I wouldn't actually give Donald a pass today. He did have another.
Did he?
Well,
I missed it.
I don't know. It was billed as a press conference, but it was just another made-for-TV show.
Where a campaign appearance. Got it.
Zero questions. The reason you didn't hear that much is he just read the script. I mean, he call it reading, whatever. He tried to read it, but I mean, he stayed on script. He brought his security blanket out. He had Mnuchin on one side and Pompeo on the other side and a couple other guys. None of them wearing masks, all of them within a few feet of each other, standing to support, literally support Trump, who stood at the podium and read from the teleprompter and railed against China. He said the U.S. is pulling out of WHO. Yeah. WHO, you know, it's not fair that U.S. pays $450 million and China only pays $45 million, and that they didn't really warn about the pandemic, and that he'll give the money to a better cause. And then he railed against China. He said he's gonna limit Chinese scientists from coming. He's going to change the rules with Hong Kong so they don't have preferred status, because Hong Kong is just an extension of China now. And he complained about China a lot and then turned around and left.
he's really, I don't know how much of this is theater and how thick the Chinese skin is.
This is. Well, it's made for TV. Number one, he doesn't have the authority to pull the U.S. out of WHO. The WHO, the U.S. joined in 1948. You got to give a 1-year notice. If you're going to do this, you have to be paid up on your...
Funniest thing, he never mentioned any of that.
Mm-hmm. No. He just said, this is what I'm doing. You know, and like I said, he did it with two guys on either side of him to give him support. And,
and maybe they were there to pick him up and carry him away if he started running off at the mouth again.
No, he cannot afford to run off at the mouth. His polls are just dismal. He knows that it's in part because of his Clorox fiasco.
Did you get the cartoon I sent you?
Yeah, that cartoon was right on the money. Actually, what had happened was the guy who did the cartoon, I guess there's a website where you can put your works up and have different newspapers, et cetera, license them and run them, and you get a royalty or something for that. And Trump went and complained for copyright. And you know what the copyright was?
No.
That the cartoon characters that were drinking the Kool-Aid or chloroquine or Clorox, whichever, you know, was the most, was next in line
poison.
on what he was selling.
Clorox. Right.
Right. That they were wearing MAGA hats. I mean, so because they
that
said
was
MAGA,
that was the copyright.
Because they said MAGA, he said that was copyright, and they pulled it down, and the guy complained, and they put it back up, and so, yeah, basically, that skirmish that he lost. he's lost on Twitter again. I mean, today he went and put up something. How did it go? When the looters start, the shooters start, or something along those lines. And
when the looting starts, the shooting starts. That's what he said.
Right. So Twitter basically pulled that down. And basically said it violated their rules on promoting violence or something to that effect. But they thought, you know, in the interest of public information, you could click here and still read it. So you could still see it, but you had to click past the explanation of why it had been pulled. And so he went and put it up on the official White House website, and he retweeted it there. And of course, they blocked it there too.
What a clever
fellow! So he got blocked. He got blocked twice today on that one, and that one was for promoting violence. And so they've got their eye on him now. He's not going to be able. I mean, he can't.
Well, I can see Pompeo
tweeting.
Yeah. I can see Pompeo or Mnuchin just stepping up, say, "Mr. President," and then make some other point if he starts to run his mouth in the wrong direction. I think they're viewing him more as a potential liability.
They, They looked very uncomfortable. They were standing
there.
They knew they were behind a bozo, and you know that he was, you know, he's falling fast, They were a few feet away. I had trouble catching him, but you know, maybe they were. He had one on either side, and there were a couple other guys there, and literally, he just read this. Little speech, and he just turned around and walked out, and everybody followed him, and that was it. So, you know, it was billed as a press conference, but, you know, he really didn't do anything other than read what his prepared remarks were.
He didn't even say, "Thank you, ladies and gentlemen." That's it? He just left.
I mean, I was surprised. I don't remember. I don't think he said anything. I don't remember what the final line was. You know, he was just going on, and just kind of wonder when he was going to run out of things to complain about. And then he just abruptly turned around and walked off stage. I mean, it was outside, actually. So he just turned around and walked back into the White House, I guess is what it was. So I think it was in the Rose Garden. So he just...
Well, it was a burger, fries, and a Diet Coke in there. And that's where he was headed.
Yeah, well, he's going to have issues because he's going to have problems with his tweets now. He can't just write anything he wants. Well, he can, but, you know, they'll have all these notices go up on it.
And they're on him now, and you're right.
And then they're going to start complaining if... you know, he does much more golfing. He's still got a pandemic, even though he tries to ignore. You got demonstrations erupting nationwide, and you got 40 million people unemployed. And so it's not going to look good if he goes out and just plays golf and says, "Well, I can't tweet, so I'll just go golf a little bit." And good luck with the country. So anyway, it's a disaster. You know, I've said many times he's anti-scientist. I mean, you know, pull out of WHO in the middle of a pandemic. He's going to ignore the pandemic and talk about, "Oh, we're going after China now." Going to blame China because they didn't acknowledge the pandemic. And it's ridiculous. Anybody paying attention knew what the pandemic was. I mean, when it was and what it was going to be. China released the sequence, I think, on January 11th. As soon as you saw that sequence, you didn't even have to wait till January 11th because they actually said on December 31st, that it was a novel coronavirus. And, you know, it wasn't that close. Couldn't say exactly how close it was to SARS, but it was a novel coronavirus. And as soon as they released the sequence on January 11th, you could see that it was closer to the SARS coronavirus than any other sequence in GeneBank. I mean, it was, and its official name is SARS-CoV-2, you know, close to your 2.0. And it's got a polybasic cleaver site. So it doesn't have the limitations that SARS has. It can go and affect almost any cell that's got a good amount of an ACE2 receptor and furin. And it's off to the races. So it's not limited to the respiratory tract, upper or lower. It can attack lots of different cells in the body. It's creating cardiac problems. It apparently can infect endothelial cells, which is causing all kind of problems with the vascular system. That's what's leading to the clots. That's what's creating these cardiac issues. That's what's leading to encephalitis. And so there's a whole host of issues that are becoming more and more apparent. And that one that you cited where scientists are now talking about reinfections is my understanding from contact I had mentioned who's in the hospital with a reinfection.
Yes. Yes.
And his doctor has got like 15 other patients that are kind of in the same boat that he's in. They've got reinfections and neurological issues. And
not good.
14 out of the 15 are male. So there may be an issue along those lines also.
Is he on being ventilated yet?
No, you know? He doesn't. No, he's got neurological issues. His
so this is the, this is the virus gone on a different venue. It's not pulmonary. It's gone after the neurotrophic system in the body. I don't know if I sent you this or not. I must have. Coronavirus may be a vascular disease,
right,
which would, according to these people, would explain a lot of things. Did that article ring true to you? Did it have traction?
Yeah, they mentioned furin in there. If you look at it, this is all related to the polybasic cleavage site. And just as a brief review, the virus, to get into the cell, A, has to attach to a receptor, and B, it has to cleave. It needs an enzyme that cleaves the spike gene product, because it's a long product, and it actually gets cut. And that happens with most of the virus. The same thing happens with influenza. To get in, they require a cellular protease. So they need an enzyme that they don't have the gene for. They rely upon whatever cell they're going to get into to have that enzyme. So normally for influenza, without a polybasic cleavage site, the enzyme that cleaves that is found in cells in the respiratory tract. So it stays in the respiratory tract. This virus has a couple additional basic amino acids at that cleavage site. And the sequence at that cleavage site determines the specificity of what type of protease will actually do the cleavage. And the one that this virus has, the SARS-CoV-2, is recognized by the protease furin, F-U-R-I-N. And furin is widespread. It's present in many different cell lines, cell types, including endothelial cells. And that's what this article was about. It was saying that endothelial cells have both the ACE2 inhibitor, the ACE2 receptor. As well as the furin protease. And so those cells can be entered by this virus. And so it can attack endothelial cells. And that can cause some of the clotting problems. That can cause the issues with the heart, the cardiac issues, and it can go and cause swelling in the brain, and so neurological issues, and that's part of the reasons why, you know, they have poor circulation in the extremities, and people have blue feet because they're not really getting the oxygen down there. So what they're basically saying is a lot of the problems that are seen with this virus are due to the fact that it can infect endothelial cells. And so those are cells that are going to line blood vessels. And so the virus can get into the lining of the blood vessels, and that can lead to the clot. And that can cause some of these other issues with breaking through and getting into the brain and causing neurological problems. And so the article you said kind of indicated that all of these additional issues with the virus are all related to the fact that it can affect endothelial tissues and cause problem with the vascular system. So that's why this virus is a major problem. And these other issues are probably dependent somewhat on viral load. And that's what I was describing for this associate, that basically he got infected a second time. He was infected back in April. And then when he got infected the second time, he had a lot of virus. I mean, his CT score was down to 10. And the lower that number is, the more viral RNA there is. And the cutoff's like 37. So if it's above 37, you're negative. And his just kept getting lower and lower because he had a fairly high load before he was symptomatic. And they kept testing him, and it went all the way down to 10. And 10's a very high level of virus. And he's on remdesivir, and it's getting better by the day. And he's back to 30 now. So if he gets it up to 37, then he's technically negative. And but he's gone from 10 to 30 in a couple of days now. So it is going down. And but he still has issues with numbness in extremities and tingling in his feet and those types of issues that hopefully are going to go away when the virus goes away. But apparently that the same issues are showing up in people that are getting reinfected. And and he does have the Italian strain. So what he got infected with initially in April, isn't clear. They don't have those samples anymore, and so they don't know what he originally had, but they did sequence what he currently has.
All right, what I'm going to do is read a little bit of this article here, but I do want to point out again that we began covering this. Now the CDC is admitting it was in circulation in January. We began on January the 8th, Henry and I, covering this, and all of the projections, if you've been along with for the ride, you'll know that all the projections you've gotten from Dr. Nyman here they've been spot on. You could not get a better record of what has happened than all of the programs we've done for these many months now. Here's a little bit of this article. I'm very proud of the work we've done here. We've been very honorable, very scientific, very straight all the way. And we've got a lot of good email. Thank you, all of you who write in. You don't have to agree with everything we say, but you'll understand and I think appreciate the fact that no one can try harder than we have to bring the reality of this to you. And that's what we've done. Here's the article. In April, blood clots emerged as one of the many mysterious symptoms attributed to COVID-19, a disease that had initially been thought to largely affect the lungs in the form of pneumonia. Quickly after came reports of young people dying due to coronavirus-related strokes. Next, it was COVID toes, painful red or purple digits, especially on the feet of teenagers. What do all of these symptoms have in common? An impairment in blood circulation. Add in the fact that 40% of deaths from COVID-19 are related to cardiovascular complications. 40%. And the disease starts to look like a vascular infection instead of a purely respiratory one. Months into the pandemic, there is now a growing body of evidence to support the theory that the novel coronavirus can infect blood vessels, which could explain not only the high prevalence of blood clots, strokes, and heart attacks, but also provide an answer for the diverse set of head-to-toe symptoms that have emerged. All these COVID-associated complications were a mystery. We see blood clotting, we see kidney damage, we see inflammation of the heart, we see stroke, we see encephalitis, swelling of the brain, said William Lee, L-I, M-D, president of blah, blah, blah. A whole myriad of seemingly unconnected phenomena that you do not normally see with SARS or H1N1 or, frankly, most infectious diseases. So if you start to pull all the data together that's emerging, it turns out that the virus is probably a vasculotropic virus, meaning that it affects the blood vessels, said Mandeep Mehra, MD, medical director of such and such and such and such. So there you go. It looks like a vascular disease first and secondarily hitting many of these major organ systems. It's not clear, but the evidence seems to be pointing that way very strongly now, according to this paper.
Right. And here's one other paragraph from that paper, and it says, in SARS-1, which is the SARS from 17 years ago, the protein that's required to cleave, it is likely present only in the lung environment. So that's where it can replicate. To my knowledge, it really doesn't go systemically, it says. SARS-CoV-2 is cleaved by a protein called furin, and that's the big danger, because furin is present in all our cells. It's ubiquitous.
Wow.
So that, and furin is the protease. That's the enzyme that cleaves it, and it cleaves it because it has a polybasic cleavage site.
Well, so you're right. And
SARS-2 is cleaved by furin,
yeah.
And it's in many different cell types.
If these are accurate statements we're reading, and I believe them to be so, and I'm not a scientist like Henry, it means an infection of the blood vessels would explain many of the weird tendencies of this novel coronavirus, like the high rates of blood clots, which have killed young people and people of all ages. Endothelial cells help regulate clot formation by sending out proteins that turn the coagulation system on or off. The cells also help ensure that blood flows smoothly and doesn't get caught on any of the rough edges on the inside of the blood vessel walls. The endothelial cell layer is in part responsible for clot regulation. It inhibits clot formation through a variety of ways, says such and such. If that's disrupted, you could see why that may potentially promote clot formation. So there we go. Remember when we first, those of you long-term listeners, we first were talking about, what's this heart stuff? What's this clot stuff? People are dying, they're stroking out. So here's your answer. If the virus loves the endothelial cells inside the circulatory system, and we have enough in our body, the length of capillaries, veins, and arteries is apparently enough to circle the planet 2 times in one human body. That's how micro it is. That's how many capillaries there are in the body. This is enormous. So when this virus gets in there, it can wreak havoc in no time. Just go crazy.
Yeah. And that's why CDC and WHO know that the body count for this virus is an underestimate, that you have people that have heart attacks because of this virus, and they die
correct.
At home.
Absolutely
and they
correct.
Don't get tested.
Right.
And that's why when you look at that graph that I sent the link to the other day from the CDC on excess deaths,
right.
You can
yesterday.
See these big spikes and in the curve. And for the U.S., those spikes happened in late March and April. And that is in contrast to what's happening with the flu, where they show a little spike.
Uh-huh.
Right around January or so. So this is a totally different time frame when this happened in the U.S. And that's when you saw this big spike in excess deaths. And it's because this virus can cause all kind of deaths that are not linked to pneumonia or having, you know, some type of respiratory issue, that they cause these other issues that that lead to the deaths. And if you just look at the death certificates and look at them from the various states, you see the states that had the large outbreaks of COVID, like New York or New Jersey or Massachusetts or Philadelphia or Pennsylvania or Illinois or Louisiana or Michigan, that they all have these big peaks that are much larger than the peaks that are done in a bad flu season. And they're all about the same time, and they all exceed the target that indicates there's a major outbreak. And that's why, that's why if you look at these tables, I mean, I was just looking at the country levels, and things have changed very dramatically. And so just to give an overview, I haven't done this for a little while, as to where the virus is and why the virus is going to be a major problem in the fall is number one is, where do you think China is on the list?
Right now?
The table's got 275 countries that basically...
China's at least five or six, right?
Yeah. China is number 16.
Whoa.
There are more cases in Mexico.
Wow.
Canada. Mm-hmm. Chile. Mm-hmm. Iran. Peru, Turkey, India, Germany, France, Italy, UK, Spain. And number three is now Russia. And number two is now Brazil. And Brazil doesn't check many people. It's got a very low testing rate. And they're already up to 27,000 deaths, and they're almost at a 500,000 cases. Russia has 387,000 cases, and they've only got 4,000 deaths. Now, you know why they've only got 4,000 deaths with 400,000 cases? It's because they classify them as heart attack, strokes,
I see.
All these other things that are caused by the virus, they're saying this is a coincidence. You know, they're positive for the virus, but they don't count them as a COVID death. They count it as a heart attack, or they count it as a stroke. And so they claim there's only 4,000 deaths, which is absurd. I mean, Brazil's got a little bit more on the cases, and they've got 28,000 deaths. And the U.S. is up to, we're at over 104,000 deaths now. So the point, and that's what, you know, some of these guys out there, everybody that dies are saying it's a COVID death in the U.S., and they're overestimating them. And it's just nonsense. These people are dying from this virus, and they're dying in many different ways. And that's why if you just look at death certificates, you see this big peak when there's COVID infections. And some of the death certificates acknowledge it's COVID. But they don't get tested because they die at home. And others say it's a heart attack. And that's exactly what the doctors were saying when the outbreak started in the U.S. They were seeing these patients, and they did an EKG, and it said, it looks like they're having a heart attack. And they posted the EKGs on Twitter for other doctors to see, and I'll say, yeah, that's what these COVID patients look like. So the virus causes a lot of problems. And what's concerning is that, it doesn't seem to be even that seasonal. What you're seeing now, there was just Wisconsin now is starting to have significant numbers of cases. And this is following the Wisconsin Supreme Court that says you can't do a lockdown, that that's unconstitutional for their constitution. So it's open season in Wisconsin. And they just had their highest number of cases and deaths 2 days ago. And as far as cases are concerned, that number got totally wiped out today. So they were getting 500 cases a day, and today they got almost 800 cases. And they haven't really gotten to all these cases that are going to show up because of what happened on Memorial Day or Memorial Weekend. I mean, I mentioned that Lake Geneva, where all these people from Illinois went to Wisconsin, and very few were wearing masks, and they were having these big pool parties, and they were having the bars were full and the restaurants were full. And it usually takes 3 or 4 weeks for these numbers to show up in the official count. I mean, these people have already got the virus and they probably already have symptoms. And now they're kind of just thinking about, well, maybe I should see what I've got here. And in the next week or so, they're going to realize that they should get tested. And then if they've got enough symptoms and can get a test, then they'll start being recorded as a positive. And so the next 2 or 3 weeks, the numbers are going to start to skyrocket. And the reason that's a concern is not April. The virus is supposed to be gone in April, remember? And it's not May. Well, it's still May, but it's just
about
June.
Gone by the end of April.
It's just about June, and these numbers are going to skyrocket in the summer. And there's so much virus in the U.S. I mean, the numbers are, the number of new cases, and this is a little bit misleading because some of them are actually counting cases based upon DNA testing, but, antibody testing. But there were 24,000 new cases today. There were 24,000 new cases yesterday. And, it goes down a little bit on the weekend, but even on the weekend, there were 17,000, 18,000 each day. So there's a lot of new cases every day. The fatality rate isn't quite as high. There's about 1,300 deaths a day. And this is the summer. Things have already calmed down in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, which was really driving the numbers, 4 or 5 weeks ago. And New York it has less than 100 deaths a day now for 3 or 4 or 5 days.
Well, you always said brand new areas would pick up the slack. What you said.
Right. And it's happening, what you just mentioned in Alabama, it's in Arkansas, it's in Minnesota, and these places don't have the big numbers they've got in the big population centers in the East Coast. But they also don't have that many hospitals that have ventilators and can handle these cases. And so their ICUs are full. They don't have any more ICU beds. And they're by no means at the peak of where they're going to be. And this is just the summer. And what happens with this virus is you have these spotty outbreaks in the spring and over the summer. So you got one area that's got an outbreak, another area that's got an outbreak. But you got a lot of areas that don't have a whole lot of virus. And that's going to start to change as the gates open up and there's more and more activity, then there's going to be more and more cases. And that's, and then if they really start the schools, the beginning of August in the South, those areas like Alabama and Arkansas, and now Florida's starting to get more cases, and Georgia's starting to get more cases. And if they go ahead and open up the schools at the beginning of August, they're going to have a very hard time keeping those schools open. But between the time they open it and close them, there's going to be a lot of spread of virus. And then that's going to be just in time for the flu season. It's going to begin in the fall, and the temperature is going to get a little bit cooler. The angle of the sun is going to get a little shallower. There's going to be less sunlight. Mm-hmm. There's going to be cooler temperatures. There's going to be influenza cases competing for hospital beds, and it's going to be a total disaster. And the guy we got at the White House who's in charge of this, it's going to be holding campaign rallies and trying to hold this convention in August with everybody turning him down and say, stay home. We're not interested in bringing 50,000 people.
Bring it to Pittsburgh. You can handle it.
Yeah. Pittsburgh's not going to handle it. Yeah. I don't know who he's going to get to do it, but that cartoon that got banned is right on the money. He's got, you know, Kool-Aid and chloroquine and,
Clorox.
Clorox. And, now he's just going to come and say, well, come on down and, we'll see what happens if we pack 50,000 people indoors at a convention center and everybody's screaming and yelling about, we're ready to go. And they literally will be ready to go, but won't be on the campaign pit trail. I'll go into the ICU room and who knows what happens after that. But in any event, things are stacking up for very bad news in the fall. And it's going to become increasingly clear as more of these states open up and the numbers are going to start to creep up. And they're probably, over the summer, they're still going to be spotty. I mean, they're going to be a whole lot like what happened in the 2009 swine flu pandemic, where it kind of, in the spring, it kind of clarified things. He knew there was a pandemic, that the virus was spreading.
Yes.
It was relatively easy to transmit. It spread worldwide. It got declared a pandemic. And then they didn't talk about it a whole lot in summer camps. There were outbreaks, but didn't really get a whole lot of press coverage. And then as soon as school started, then the numbers started to take off. And,
so what's going to happen, Henry, is that the schools are going to open, and then a lot of schools are going to close right back down again within 2-3 weeks.
Right. And but that's probably going to be uneven, because, like you said,
yeah, it will be spotty.
A lot of people are tired of the.
They're going to just tough it out.
We don't want to go back to that. They will think that this is the worst that's going to happen. It's just going to be a rerun of the spring. And it's not going to be a rerun of the spring. I mean, the spring wouldn't even be a rerun of the spring.
Well, you're seeing now
the lockdown.
Second wave of infections is more virulent than the first. And I think a lot more Americans have been exposed to this than anybody realizes, frankly.
Right.
I think so.
Exactly. And they were exposed to the earlier version The Italian version kind of came along in February and March, and you could see it. I mean, I remember looking on February 21st. It was the 17th anniversary of checking into the Metropole Hotel, and the cases had just started to appear in northern Italy, and it just started to appear in Iran. And by that Friday, which is the 21st, it was starting to pop up all over the Middle East and all over Europe. And it was spreading out of Europe already, and it was showing up in Africa, and it was showing up in South America, and it was showing up in Canada and Mexico. It was showing up everywhere except for the U.S. And the only reason it wasn't showing up in the U.S. was the U.S. wasn't testing. If you didn't come from China, you didn't meet the definition of a case, and right. You didn't get tested. And so all the cases which were Americans that went to Europe, got infected, and came back, they couldn't get tested. And they were mostly on the East Coast, or at least in the eastern half of the country. So they all came in there. There was no contact tracing because they weren't tested. And they couldn't blend in because it was the middle of flu season. So they were coming back in February and March. And then, you know, Trump went and did his ban on travel. And I mean, he was only banning, you know, foreign nationals anyway. I mean, that's not who was bringing the virus. These were American tourists that were bringing the virus. But they didn't trust them, so they all came back to the U.S. because they were afraid they were going to get stuck in Europe. And then they couldn't handle them at the airports, and they had those big lines at the airports, and who knows how many people got infected at the airport trying to get into United States. And they did get into the United States. I mean, they got infected at the airport. They didn't have any symptoms. They had been infected for a few hours. And that's then right. They just spread the virus all over the eastern seaboard.
We see no signs.
And it was driven by them not being able to handle the crowds in the airport, because he just kind of dropped it. You know, he didn't make any plans.
I was just going to say that.
That were gonna come
What planning is he doing for the fall, Trump? What's he doing? Is he ordering an intense number of N95 masks? No, nothing.
No,
we've seen nothing.
He's setting up his campaign trail.
That's
he's trying
right.
to figure out what cities he's got to go to. He's going to look at the polls and see where he's going to be playing defense, because it's behind on everything. And he's going to. He's already getting worried, because he's also planning on doing a lot of tweeting, and now he's not sure that the tweeting route is going to work, and so he's got to have in-person campaign events, and that's going to turn into a major disaster.
How much longer can he duck being infected? That's a rhetorical question, of course. But I mean, the guy, seriously.
I don't know. I don't know if he's already been infected.
It seems like he'd have to have been.
But that doesn't mean he can't be infected again.
Of course.
And if he goes out on the campaign trail, I think he's almost definitely going to get infected.
Well, there are a lot of people who are going to try to infect him. Let's be honest.
It's going to. He'll probably get infected by his secret service agents, because they're all going to get infected standing at the rope lines, because the rallies are going to be loaded with virus. I mean, the fall is going to be a disaster, and it's probably going to be so bad that he's not going to be able to hold any rallies. People aren't going to go to the rallies. I mean, they're not crazy. I mean, some, I don't know. Some will go no matter what. But you know, they're going to see this, and it's going to be real obvious. You're going to see what city he goes to, and then you're going to see outbreaks at that city 3 weeks later. And it's going to be an interesting fall. But you're going to see the signs of it. You don't have to wait till the fall, and you don't have to wait for school to open in August. You're going to start seeing that in the next several weeks, because there's going to be easing up, and some of these places that haven't had much virus, they're gonna start loosening things, and people are going to drive around. They're going to open this up. People are going to go from one location to the other. The virus is going to move all over the U.S. The places that didn't have many are going to start to get it. And then if they start going to school, the cases are going to explode. And that early fall, it will be a disaster. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll find out soon enough. Henry, have a good weekend. Thanks for all the great work, and we'll talk to you Monday.
Okay. You too. Talk to you on Monday. Take care.
Thanks. All righty. And thanks to all of you for being here. Again, agree or disagree, we're putting it out there to the best of our ability. And Henry and I don't agree on everything, but we're trying our best to bring the most diverse set of realities forward that we can for you to consider. All right. Take care. Please continue to try to prepare by putting food away, especially if you've got families. Talk to you on Monday. In the meantime, you know where you'll find us. We'll be putting up new stories around the clock. Take care, and we'll talk soon.